Hi everyone, I'm Elliot Slaughter, and today I'm going to try to develop a theology of computer programming languages. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, I struggled a little bit when I was writing this talk. I like the original title and I like where the abstract was going, but that's not really the talk that came out. So I decided to change the title. My new title is, What is the Eternal Significance of Computer Science? Or maybe I should say, is there any eternal significance to computer science? Because it's not really obvious that there is anything eternally significant in there to begin with. This has been a major point of struggle for me over the years as I've done a bachelor's in computer science and then went on to do a PhD in computer science. Usually when I go and talk to people at church about what I do, the conversation goes something like this. Hey, I'm Elliot. I work with computers. Hey, that's really cool. Could you build us a website? And the problem is that I don't really do that. I mean, I could do that, but it's not my research. It's not what I'm excited about. And part of the problem is that the stuff that I do work on is just kind of obscure in the level, and it's hard for people to appreciate. The easiest way to explain the significance of something is usually to find some way that it impacts people's day-to-day lives. So if you work on Google, you could just say, I work on Google, and people will immediately know what you do and why it matters. If you say, I work on high-performance computing for scientific simulations, that's probably not going to ring any bells. And part of the problem is that in order to get from the stuff that I do work on to something that actually touches people's lives, I have to go through a list of something like 10 to 20 people, right? I have to do something, and then someone else has to take that and do something else with it, and then, you know, you go all the way down the chain, and then eventually maybe you get to slightly greener energy, you know, maybe. That's just not very compelling. And this is a problem with engineering research in general, because it just takes a lot of people to design complicated products. But it's particularly a problem in computer science because a lot of the stuff that we do is especially abstract. So the question that I really wanted most desperately to answer was, why does this matter to God? Does it matter to God? Or should I just go be a priest? Because if ministry is the only thing that really has eternal significance, then as a, quote, good Christian, I ought to just, like, drop the computer science and go do that. And so it matters that I get an answer to this question, and it matters that it's actually a technical answer, because otherwise I'm just sort of going around waving my hands, and it doesn't really connect to the science. So what I want to do for the rest of the talk is sort of dig into what it means to be a computer science and try to find some way that this connects to something that has eternal significance. So that's going to require that we ask the question, what is a computer scientist? So for those of us who do it professionally, and a few of us who do it academically as well, computer science tends to mean writing computer programs. So what is a computer program? A program is essentially anything that you interact with on a computer. It could include an app on your phone, it could be a website. If you go to Google search, that's a program that you're using. If you're using a web browser, that's a program that allows you to access the internet. The phone app on your phone is a program. The map on your phone is a program. Pretty much anything that you will ever do with a computer, somewhere, somehow, is running a program. People sometimes like to say that programs have eaten the world. Programs have two key properties. Every program defines a language, and every program is defined within a certain language. So let me say that again. Every program defines a language, and every program is defined within a language. Let me unpack that. First, every program defines a language. In the literature, the way that we formalize a computer program is by its input-output behavior. So for example, if you have a phone app, you type in a phone number, that's the input, and then it calls someone, that's the output. If you have a map app, you enter the address that you want to look at, and then it shows you the map of that address. That's the output. And we can go on. Even though all of these examples are graphical, you can take them and you can formalize them in a system which is purely textual, which is why we use the word language to describe what's going on. One way to think about it is that this is the language that you are using to tell the computer what you want it to do. Similarly, every program must be expressed in a format that the computer itself can understand. This is what we call a programming language. Programming languages are usually a lot more structured than the sorts of user interfaces that we're usually used to using. They typically, you know, one way that programming languages can show up is sort of as a list of steps that the computer has to do. And there are sort of, there's a variety of ways that this can show up. But at any rate, it's not important to know exactly what this code is doing. It turns out this happens to be computing all of the even numbers, or it returns true if a number is even. But that's not really what's important here. The important part is that this program defines a language, you know, is this number even? And it is defined within a language, which is, you know, whatever particular, you know, language describes the series of steps that the computer needs to follow to execute this program. Now, it also turns out that we can build a program which takes another program as its input. That's what we call a compiler. A compiler is a program which takes another program as its input. Now, what good is this? Essentially, a compiler plays the role of translator. What this allows us to do is it allows us to build a computer that understands one language, you know, which could be really, really simple, like just adding numbers and setting variables and repeating previous instructions, but then allow the programmer to use a different language to build the programs that are actually going to run on that computer. And it turns out that this technique is so useful that it has essentially become standard practice in the industry. No one today writes programs in assembly, which is the language that computers actually understand natively, right? No one does that. I mean, unless you're really crazy. And even, you know, we don't even really go and just use vanilla higher level programming languages either. We almost always build stuff on top of the language itself before we actually go and use it. And so the standard practice when we're solving difficult problems in software engineering is that we take the program or the problem that we want to solve, and usually we'll do divide and conquer. You'll take the problem, you'll split it in half, right, to whatever extent that you can divide the problem into pieces, and then you'll go and you'll solve each piece individually. And the way that computer science works, each half is usually simpler, more than half as simple, than when you solve the problem altogether, right? This is a case where, you know, the individual parts, you know, actually shrink when you divide them, right, as opposed to the whole. But notice what I did there. I took the problem and I sliced it in half, and then I put a language in the middle. That means that we just got a brand new language that sort of popped out of nowhere when we were just, you know, doing regular programming. For any software engineers in the audience, I just want to say I'm using an intentionally broad definition of the word language here, and I'm using it to include things like APIs and libraries and so on. All of these things specify a standard way of interacting between different pieces, and the important part here is that they all include a notion of specification. Even when you're writing a library in C++, you can still go and you can define a formal semantics for what it's doing. And in some cases, we actually go and do that. It's a lot of work, and it's kind of wacky, but you can actually go and do that. And when we go do that, we actually use all of the same techniques that we do when we want to formally define the semantics for a programming language. But what does any of this mean? What does it mean that we just created a new language? Somehow, in the process of writing a computer program, You know, we didn't just simply find a series of steps that represented what we wanted to do. We actually changed the way we wanted to talk about the problem as we were in the process of solving the problem. And the thing about computer science is that we often do these two things simultaneously without even thinking about the fact that we're flipping back and forth between these things. And so what we're seeing is that we're changing the language even as we're changing what we're saying. It's not something that you get when you're writing essays in English. We typically don't simultaneously reinvent the language as we're writing our essays. But as we're digging into this, it actually starts to show us something that might have eternal significance. In the Bible, John 1:1 says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Now, it's important to understand that what gets translated here as Word was actually originally the Greek word logos. And like a lot of other things that get translated out of Greek and into English, the original Greek concept is a lot more broad than we tend to give it credit for. Specifically, logos includes in it a notion of language. Of course, I'm not saying that God is language in some sort of a pedantic sense, but clearly from this passage, we get the idea that language is somehow a fundamental aspect of God, in the same sense that love is somehow a fundamental aspect of God. Recall what I just said, though. Programmers, not just crazy PhDs, but just regular programmers from a variety of different levels, are in the business of creating new languages on the fly. We create them whenever it suits our needs, and in many cases, we discover what we're trying to say as we're simultaneously discovering how to say it. And then, so if language is a property of God, and we're exploring the nature of language, then in some sense, as programmers, we are also exploring the nature of the divine. The way I like to think about it is, in the beginning, God performed the ultimate act of creation. And in the process, he created all languages that could ever exist, including the ones, you know, that we use in computers. Therefore, when we as programmers set out to create a program, and in that process we create some sort of a programming language, we are in some sense exploring ground that God has already traversed. We are following in God's footsteps. All of this can seem a little bit strange to think about, and it's also potentially disorienting if you take it too far. But I think in another sense it's also very comforting, because it means that I've found eternal significance in my work as a computer scientist.